Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Achtung Mall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Berlin. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's December already. Christmas looms on the horizon. The season is whipping past us. But it's that time of the month, dear listeners, where Neil, Fissler and I come together to discuss the forthcoming month's fixtures from the perspective of history. And here he is, the man himself, Mr. Neil Fissler. How are you doing, Neil?
Not too bad, Nick. Not too bad. That was quite an introduction. I hope that I live up to it this time.
Well, I'm cock-a-hoop, listeners, because I'm going to sound even more like I know what I'm talking about, thanks to my copy of Mill Who's Who that is sat right by my side. You may hear the rustling of leaves of the book as we whip through the various fixtures and we mention various obscure Mill players. And with the aid of my Mill Who's Who, which is available, of course, on victorpublishing.co.uk for £19.99, You can get Neil instant podcast credibility with the aid of that book. I find you sound like you know what you're talking about as soon as you pick up that tone. Yeah, who wrote it?
Yeah, well, I wonder who wrote it. Complete blagger, whoever it is.
It is a cracking book, listeners. I recommend it for, well, Christmas looms, as we've said already, birthdays, Christmas, you name it, bar mitzvahs, whatever your
christenings,
you name it. If there's a Millwall fan in your life, then Millwall's Who's Who by Neil Fissler with Dave Sullivan, Jim Creasy and Chris Bethel is the book you need. You will hear me flicking through whenever we come to certain players where I've not written down enough research and I need to access the book because it's that good a book.
Yeah, but that means I can't blag it now by looking at my own work.
We're going to be overrun, Neil, with Millwall podcast historians all referring to the book, all sounding like they know what they're talking about, but there we are. These are the secrets of the trade that we're in, listeners. Millwall Who's Who, 1999, victorpublishing.co.uk. Check it out. And whilst you're about your business, do check out our Achtung Millwall calendar, which is celebrating the 50th anniversary. 50 years, Neil, since 1971-72. 12 pictures of a classic squad. Harry Cripps, Barry Bridges, Derek Posse, Brian King, Benny Fenton, Big Kitch. They're all in there. All of our takings from the calendar will support the Lions Food Hub, a wonderful cause, especially at this time of year when the going gets tough for many families. It was charging £13 for that. That includes a couple of quid for postage and packing, the stamps being the main cost. But otherwise, your remaining tenner, roughly, will go to support the Food Hub. Really appreciate everyone who's supported it so far. But we do need more. I want to generate a decent donation to the Lions Food Hub from the Achtung Mill calendar. Visit the Mill Supporters Club, the MSC website. They have a shop on there and they're really kindly supporting it by carrying it on there. And I post it out when I get the order. So thanks in advance to everyone for the support on that front. If I say so myself, it's a nice looking calendar, Neil. If I say so myself, I designed it and did it all myself. And I'm going to give myself a bit of self-praise here, but I think I did quite a good job on that one.
Mate, you always do a good job with your calendars. And it's something I think that most Millwall fans look forward to, because you buy the official club calendar, the chances are, yeah, whichever player they've got for February, they're going to flog in January.
John Deddy Bavage and Mr. February or something.
Yeah. And then Yeah, but then you're holding your breath towards August or September, October, November, December, that the player's still there as well.
True. Well, we at least the, if you go for 50-year-old players, listeners, you can't go far wrong on that kind of front. Also, I mean, I'm hoping, really do. I mean, we did the history one last year, Neil, and this one as well, the 50th anniversary. It's nice to be able to do something that I hope people will keep. You know, it's a calendar, so it loses its usefulness, if you like, after the year. But these are souvenirs, and I like the idea of, if you're going to charge people for something and it's going to go for a good cause, at least make it something they can keep and look back at in years to come. So
they are actually magnificent photographs,
all from the collection of Chris Beffel, who supported the Who's Who book. Shout out to Chris, because he's a lovely bloke. He was really helpful for me. I know Chris anyway, but I just emailed him out of the blue, and he gave me that selection, which are, and as you say, they're fantastic photos, some really, really strong images. The one of Harry Cripps is my favourite. I think that's just a beautiful, classic image on a summer's day at Colblow Lane. Harry's in the all-white kit, and it's just, I don't know, it's just like one of those forever summer-type images, and it's just beautiful. So I'm really proud of it, and it also is supporting the Food Hub, a great cause, dear listeners. So
what's even scarier was I didn't realise until I was looking at Ron Gray earlier on, it's actually 60 years ago that we won the 4th Division title.
I know.
61-62. I wasn't even born.
I was born, but I was unaware of Millwall's existence at that point, and would have probably not been too bothered if I had been made aware of it at the age of 2 years old. We digress, Neil. We've come together today.
As we always do.
We've come together today to talk about the forthcoming month's fixtures, which will be Birmingham City, it will be Peterborough, it will be Preston, Swansea, and Coventry, and we've looked at various fixtures from the past, some of which we've matched up, to be honest. Great minds think alike, and others we've just chosen different ones. So we're going to begin actually with the same choice of fixture now, aren't we? The Millwall Birmingham, a dramatic scoreline from 1970, Neil. Millwall 6, Birmingham City 2.
Yeah, well, let's face it. Yeah, well, they've tonked us at home a couple of times.
They haven't.
So, and they tonked us away. Or, we got tonked up at St. Andrews at the end of last season. But this was probably one of Millwall's greatest ever teams. And this was them clicking into gear, wasn't it?
In their pomp.
Came down. Obviously, very famous former Wolves manager.
Yeah.
And there's actually a Millwall connection in this Birmingham City side as well.
Is there? I haven't got that one.
Phil Summerill played number 11.
Phil Summerill, a striker. He would have joined, and this is where you hear the rustle of the turn of the page as I swiftly look up Phil Summerill, listeners, or I remember.
He joined, I believe he was leading goal scorer when we won promotion.
Yeah, he wasn't terribly prolific, Neil. He wasn't leading goal.
He well liked, even by his own admission, by fans.
No, far from it. I mean, you know, I stood on the halfway line and watched Phil Summerill for that whole 74 to 78. It was even longer than I thought. I didn't think he was here for the 4 years, but 103 games, listeners, 26 goals. He was our lead centre-forward. I think he only scored about... his big season was about 8 or 9 goals in one season, if memory serves.
And that was the promotion-winning season, I think.
Yeah, it almost certainly was. And there he is. He went on to become an interior decorator and delivered cars for in Birmingham. Phil Summerill. He was a Marmite kind of character, I think, at the Den. But let's get back to this fixture here, 6-2. Played in a midweek, Neil, 11th of March 1970, Wednesday night game.
Magical night under the lights down at Colblow Lane.
When I was a kid, I used to love going to Millwall under the lights. So it was just the theatre, it's theatrical, it's wonderful. And as you get older, you lose that sense. It's now all about a pain of getting out of the house and, you know, getting home late and all that kind of boring
being cold.
As a kid, I loved it. I wasn't around for this one. 7,825 were at the game. The goal scoring sequence. Shall I read out the goal scoring sequence for us, Neil?
Go on then.
1-0, Gordon Bolland on 21 minutes. 2-0 it went. 5 minutes later to Derek Posse. Birmingham, the Blues, pulled one back. Murray, I don't know who Murray is. Bert Murray, 37 minutes.
That was a penalty.
Right, okay. So the penalty's put them back in the game. And then I'm going to guess that's Trevor Hockey.
It is Trevor Hockey, yes.
41 minutes, a very famous Welsh international listeners. And he was bearded. He always had a big, thick beard and long hair of the day. He looked like he
died very young.
Did he?
Yeah, he died when he was in his 30s, early 40s.
I didn't know he passed away. Oh,
he didn't get a heart attack.
Well, he looked like
calculates what the 70s was about, really, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Long hair and beard. He looked like he was guitarist in Black Sabbath or something, you know. Trevor Hockey's made it 2-2 by half time. So the teams have gone in half time 2-2. So it's been a fairly, Lions have established a 2-goal lead and they've been turned around. For 2-2, and then second half, almost straight from kickoff, pretty much 47 minutes. Gordon Bolland makes it 3-2 on 58. Bolland seals a hat trick. Gordon Bolland hat trick for 4-2. Keith Weller, Neil, on 74 makes it 5-2. And then the cherry on the cake at the end of the night, Eamon Dunphy on 84 minutes makes it 6-2. Some wonderful names on both sides there. Gordon Bolland hat trick. He's actually a very good player for us, Gordon Bolland. He really gets mentioned at the top table, so to speak, does he?
No, well, just having a look at his goal scoring record. His goal scoring record for us was absolutely tremendous.
Top. Yeah.
He had 12 goals, 69-70, 14 goals, 71-72 in that near miss, and that's without FA Cup goals, and then he's got 19 goals the season after, which was his best ever return for a season. Yeah, no, one of those players who was discovered in non-league football, started out at Boston
United.
He didn't quite make it.
Yep.
Went to Orient and helped them win promotion to the First Division, the only time in their history.
Yes.
Played in the First Division, and then he knocked around a little bit, never quite had a career in the top flight, did he? Norwich, Charlton, us. We're all Division Two.
Yeah, kind of second rank, as I suppose. But I'm just looking at these numbers. I mean, you're right. I mean, what a goal scoring record. 66 goals from 273 games overall. 1968 to 1975. I've got this private theory, Neil. There are many a player, and I'm going to put Gordon Bolland into this category, whose theatre and platform is the Den. They take off, they knock around, they're good, but for some reason, they take off at Millwall. I'm thinking probably Steve Morrison. I'll put him in the same kind of category. You know, they can do the rounds, they can be good players elsewhere, but somehow the Den is their stage. And I think Gordon Bolland was in that category.
I think he encapsulates what Benny Fenton bought to Millwall. He bought to Millwall and built a team that wasn't a team of superstars, largely.
No, that's right.
You look at that side and he picked up Posse and Weller and... Dumphy, who hadn't really...
No, Manchester United, but not really part of the big time there, was he? Yeah. You know,
Harry Cripps, although he wasn't a Harry Cripps signing, but
yeah,
he kind of took off, didn't he? And
yeah,
Brian Brown, I think, was another one. Did he come from
Brown? Chelsea? Yeah, Brown. I mean, it's a near classic lineup: King in goal, Brian Brown, Anna Doy, Barry Kitchener, Harry Cripps, Dougie Alder, Dennis Burnett, great player,
superb player.
Keith Weller. I mean, I never saw Keith Weller, but those that have seen Keith, saw Keith, speak of him in hushed tones. He's apparently a silky, smooth, skillful midfielder. We'll go on to play for England, I think, Neil, wouldn't he? When I started going to Millwall, he was playing for Leicester at that point, and I think he finished up in America in the end. Dunphy, and then up front, Posse and Bolland, two great goal-scoring names. So, Yeah, I mean, I think that Gordon Bolland does have his place in the pantheon at Mill, and yet some ages, it's nice to be able to do that. We've said it before, Neil, on this show. This gives us a chance to mention players that probably don't get the profile, and it's just great to, you know, to be able to mention them. The Lions will go on to finish 10th in that 69-70 season. Remarkable contrast between the home win ratio, 14 home wins. The Den was the fortress Den that we keep hearing about, not hearing about maybe nowadays. Just one away win, 14 wins at home, one away win. We didn't travel, did we?
No, we didn't. But that team is, yeah, well, I'm going to put it out there. I think that the team then was better than the team that God has promoted to the first division. I've got to be honest.
Really? You go that far, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think that they're two great teams, and you shouldn't ever really compare teams, really. But this was one hell of a team, and
yeah,
virtually every member of that side and that squad they are spoken about in hushed tones, aren't they? And
yeah,
Dumphy, who's Marmite. You talk to Brian King about him and he absolutely hates him.
Well, actually, I was just going to mention Brian King's name because I think when I spoke to King, I had the pleasure of speaking to him last year in the lockdown. I think he said it since because he's done quite a few shows and things whatnot since. But I think he said that team should have done better. I think there's a slight sense that... I don't know, it's like dropping a catch in cricket. It should have achieved more than it actually did, even though it has legendary status. The top flight was what should have been achieved by it.
I think we were robbed slightly that there was only two teams up in those days, yeah, weren't there?
Tough to get promoted. Yeah.
And I think you talk to a couple of players from that era and I think they took their eye off the ball slightly at the end of the season.
Yeah,
I agree. And some players, one of them being Dumphy, didn't really pull their fingers out and they played when they wanted to play.
Yeah. Great result, 6-2. I'm just looking at a Daily Mirror report from the game, published next day, 12th of March. Crystal Palace boss Bert Head was at the Den last night to see this Millwall 6-goal run. Palace would have been a first division side, I think, at this time. And apparently, you can get your hands off of him, Bert Head. He's looking at Keith Weller, who was the force behind Mill's biggest win of the season. But Gordon Bolland was the smash and grab ace with a hat trick. Sounds like a great night to have been down at Den that night, I must say. One thing that did strike me, just before we move on from the Birmingham fixture, Neil. I was looking on, is it 11versus11.com? And the first time we played Birmingham was actually in 1946, quite late in. We didn't play them for a long time. We'd never played them. It's interesting. I didn't realise.
I haven't quite looked at that. I must admit.
Yeah, apparently the first fixture is 1946, post-war. I think we finished up, I think, in the second division. Maybe we got amalgamated in with them. And that was the first time we played them until
then.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah, well, I guess that for years, Birmingham and Small Heath, as they were before then, they probably hadn't been out the top flight.
Probably not. No.
And you only drew teams in the FA Cup back then. There wasn't the League Cup.
No.
The Mickey Mouse Cups, was there, that you can get teams in?
No, it's true. So there we are. As we do love an aside on this show, listeners, so that was an aside quite late in the century before we actually would take the field versus Birmingham City, 1946.
Achtung, Millwall.
But we're going to move along now, Neil. The next fixture in December is the away game at Peterborough. You've kept to the rules this time. I've broken the rules. I was digging you out for breaking the rules last time.
I've stuck to them for once.
As ever, those that have been closest to me will tell you this. As ever, my when I dig somebody out, it comes back to haunt me very quickly, and it's come back to haunt me here today. Neil stuck to the rules. He's picked out an away game. Millwall winning 3-2 at Peterborough on the 7th of October 1963. Peterborough 2, Millwall 3. I didn't know that Derek Dougan, Neil, had played for Peterborough. I remember him for Wolves. I didn't remember him for Peterborough.
I must admit, I'd forgotten that. And I've dug out a match report here.
Okay.
And I believe it's from the Daily Herald. And it says, pity that all those Millwall fans who gathered around the boardroom recently, right, howling for the head of Ron Gray, who could not have been at Peterborough last night. Yeah, there's a theme here. Yeah,
doesn't sound like us at all.
No, exactly. Yeah, no, well, Millwall fans calling for the manager on social media these days. Oh, and what happens?
Yeah, absolutely.
They would have seen Millwall in command for long periods. They would have seen a tremendous fighting spirit.
Familiar.
When Peterborough were on top. Yeah. For this game was no fluke result. It was Peterborough's first home defeat of the season. Even with all the luck going their way, we always get shit refs, don't we? They never look like going.
Nothing new is there in this life. Winning.
And they went 1-0 up when Dugan headed in a centre by Smith. 10 minutes later, Millwall were level. Joe Broadfoot. Now, then there's a name,
yeah.
Who at one stage you used to see him around the press room quite a lot.
Well, I was just going to say, wasn't he the like the match day host? I think he worked on both sides over on the corporate box side, and also in the kind of West End. I think he was like the meter and greeter, and he used to go out with in all weathers, in a thin shirt, wouldn't he? A bit like Sean Dyche we saw the other day in the cold. Joe Broadfoot would always walk out with just a kind of like his shirt with his cuffs turned up, no matter what the weather.
Yeah, the colourful character, Joe Broadfoot. I was once doing some research and I was Googling his name or something, and it says he ran a massage parlour in somewhere or other. Yeah, I should know. I was his receptionist.
There's a podcast all in this one. This little revelation, Neil.
I think he's fairly well known down the Den.
Well known, he was a character. I think he was
absolute character of that.
His stories were well known as well. And I think I hadn't heard the massage parlour one. I'm going to move along. This is a family show, listeners. I'm not going to dwell too long on the idea of.
Anyway, yeah, well, Millwall dominated play for long periods.
Oh dear.
And it was against the run of play that Peterborough regained the lead after 39 minutes. Dugan was upended in the penalty area. That's a great word, isn't
upended
it?
Upended is a cool word.
And Pierce scored from the spot. 2 minutes after the interval, Gary Townend equalised for Millwall, with the home side appealing in vain for offside. Alino doing us a favour.
Well, there we are. Miracles never cease.
He didn't do us much of a favour last week, did they? And the winner came 20 minutes from the end. The Peterborough defence was thrown off balance. And Pat Terry, who I think we spoke about in our last show, had all the time in the world to score.
And there it is. 3-2 win for Millwall.
Great team, actually. Absolutely superb.
Just looking at that, some great names in there, Neil.
Alex Stepney.
Yep.
Dennis John, whose son, Will Griff John, is a Welsh Rugby Union international.
Okay.
A current Welsh Rugby Union international, no doubt. John Gilchrist. Dave Harper.
Dave Harper, father of Frank Harper.
Yeah, Frank Harper. Tom Wilson. Joe Stock, who, if you read that Millwall Who's Who book that you've got in front of you, became a council rat catcher.
I hadn't looked at it. I was looking at Townend. I was going to mention Townend. I'm going to have to look at him now. Ratcatcher's a great job. Stop.
Broadfoot, Townend, Terry. Richie Ward, who was an England amateur international. I believe Tooting and Mitcham or somebody like that rings a bell.
Yeah.
And Joel Haverty, Northern Irish.
Northern Irish international.
National.
I was looking at Townend, listeners. Gary Townend, sorry. But now Neil's completely blown me away with Joe Stocks, who became a council rat catcher. And I remember once, I mean, just rat catching, I don't know why, it's got some grotesque kind of, it's essential, you need rat catchers, but it's got like a grotesque quality to it. And I remember I was working in Hackney and we called in pest control. You don't call them rat catchers anymore, you call them pest control now. And they came to the property and the bloke who did it was a character in his own right. He could have come from a Charles Dickens novel, this guy. And he brought me afterwards over at the office, a black bag full of dead rats and showed it to me. I said, I don't want to see it. You know, I just want you to get rid of it. That's what we're paying for. I trust that you've done your job. I don't need to see this kind of hellscape of dead rats in a black bag, which he brought over to me. Anyway, that's another podcast series, my memories of working in housing. So yeah, Joe Stocks, rat catcher. Gary Townend was the one I was looking at because it's just one of those names. And one of the beauties of this show, listeners, is you come across names that you don't know and haven't come across before. 51 games for us, Neil. 20 goals, Gary Townend, a forward.
That's not a bad return, actually.
1960-64, no, good return. Good return indeed. And another one had done some non-league kind of Red Hill, came to Millwall, and then went to the non-leagues afterwards, Hillingdon Borough, Chelmsford and Hillingdon. Weymouth and so on. A name that I've not come across before.
Who were all actually good non-league teams. Those teams that he went to, the Southern League and the Isthmian League, that was top level football.
Yeah, I mean
quite often what with wages in football, you earn more by doing a bit of a job and playing in the Southern League or the Isthmian League.
Well, it's an interesting point. This is going way off topic now, but just again, on that point again, it's interesting now that I think similar times are returning in non-league football, Neil, because as you've just said, and you see it throughout the book, how many players have come to Millwall over time from decent non-league sides, talented players often. And now I think we're starting to see it. I mean, I was reading something the other day talking about the National League level and some of the wages are being paid, some of the names. I mean, we're going to come to two in my choice of fiction next, but playing in non-league now is actually not seen as quite a disastrous thing that it was a few years ago. And there are quite a few players, I'm thinking that Bromley, they've got Byron Webster and Liam Trotter playing out their days, but they would see it as quite a viable thing to do late in their career. Similar times, a strength of non-league football coming back, perhaps.
Yeah, you can actually earn quite decent money. I've heard of clubs in the Western League and things like that pay £200-300 a game.
Yeah. There's ambition there. I mean, yeah, if you look at Wrexham now, Neil, which is backed by the Hollywood
A-listers,
Ryan, what's his name? Ryan something.
Ryan Reynolds. And
they're so famous, I've forgotten their name. But yeah, you've got money flying around. You've got ownerships that are wanting to achieve Football League status. And so maybe, you know, we've just touched on some players from the past who made it from non-league. We're seeing similar times now. Just to develop that point slightly, listeners, my fixture is much more recent. I was actually at this game. I think probably a lot of the listeners to the show would have been at Peterborough 5, Millwall 3, an 8-goal thriller from 2015. Seems much more recent, Neil, than 2015. I will still remember being in that rickety wooden stand that they have at London Road.
It's horrible, wasn't it? Yeah. Absolutely zero leg room there.
Oh, you got pillars in front of you. I remember they had a guy, like a pre-match mascot, a guy dressed up in top hat and tails, and a young lady with him looked like she was out of a Gainsborough painting or something, walking around. It's all very odd.
You also remember him getting dogs abuse.
Oh, he was. You can fill in what he got.
He got absolutely dogs abuse. I can remember going up there Boxing Day one year, and he was pelted with all sorts. I think
I think if half of it was true, he'd be doing time in one of the specialist wings.
Yeah, if any of it was true, Maxwell, we should be on.
Anyway, 5-3 loss this particular. It was a spectacular game. Opening goals for Peterborough from Lee Angel, 19 minutes, we were 2-0 down. But then we pulled it back to 2 each. Byron Webster getting a goal in 52 minutes, 55 minutes, Tony Craig. What a servant Tony Craig was for our club, Neil. And then Peter back in the lead, going 3-2 on 69 minutes, Christopher Forrester. Connor Washington, would he not go on to an expensive move at some point, Connor
Didn't he end up at QPR, Northern Irish International?
Yeah, multi-million pounds worth of talent there. He's made it 4-2. Yeah, 4-2 on 72 minutes. We've then made it 4-3 through Mark Beavers, who a player I always liked, Mark Beavers, great central defender.
Ironically at Peterborough now, I believe.
I think he is, yeah. And then the game gets away from us on 81. John Taylor. It was a strange game. So I mean, we got beaten. It was a really enjoyable spectacle as a football fan. You know, I know you can't always distinguish Mill getting beat from the actual enjoyment of the football, but it was end-to-end stuff and all guns were blazing on both sides. The Mill team that day is one that's both familiar and seems a long way away now. Jordan Archer in goal, Tony Craig, Mark Beavers, Jimmy Abdu, Carlos Edwards. What a player, Neil. Carlos Edwards, really skillful. Came to us very late in his career, didn't he, Carlos?
He's still playing. I think I saw him playing for Bury St Edmunds or somebody.
I was going to say, yeah, in the lower reaches now. Byron Webster, we've mentioned, playing at Bromley. Sean Williams, Fred Onyedinma, when he was still seen as a happening talent. I think he'll come back to haunt us, Fred. I think he's not that bad a player, actually. He seems to have found his niche at Luton, but we'll see. Ed Upson. I've forgotten all about Ed Upson playing for Millwall. It's Ed wonderful Upson. when you do these little shows. Steve Morrison, Aidan O'Brien, subs were Ben Thompson, Shane Ferguson, and Lee Gregory. But my eye was drawn, just developing that point. I will get there in the end, listeners. Sat on the bench that day, including amongst the non-used subs were Joe Martin and Lee Martin, both of whom are now applying their trade at Ebbsfleet. And I saw them a few weeks back when I did one of my non-league match reports. Joe and Lee Martin both playing at Ebbsfleet in the National League. Lee Martin still looks, as he ever always did, he always looked like a talent waiting to happen, but nothing quite ever sparked for him at the end, did it, Neil?
No, actually, when we talk about players that have come back and did tremendous, decent things, I would actually include Byron Webster in that.
Yeah.
I think he looked absolutely awful when he first joined us.
He did.
And probably didn't help playing under Ola Wirtz.
No.
But then he was one of those players where I think he had a couple of injuries and he came back and he looked he looked like a proper Millwall player.
Something clicked, didn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Something clicked into place and he became a proper, proper Millwall player. And a player that I gained a tremendous amount of respect for and actually enjoyed watching him play.
He was a character as well, Neil. I mean, he had a personality. You can only deliver a personality, of course, listeners, if you deliver on the field. That's number one. This would have been under Neil Harris's management. And I suppose you've got to credit Neil Harris. I mean, that you're right, under Ian Holloway, he looked very at sea. I mean, he looked like he was out of his depth. You know, the level was way above him. But when Neil Harris, I presume, took him to one side, maybe there was some, you know, a kind of combination of hard and soft words, who knows, but he did come back transformed. He seemed to, cliche time, get what it is to be a Millwall player, didn't he?
Yeah, he was just a really good, solid Millwall-type player.
Yeah.
Just somebody who, if he ever does listen to this, just thank you for actually turning it around, and absolutely, you gave us a lot of pleasure.
Absolutely. I saw him. In fact, he was on the Wall Talk podcast the other week, I think, and I've seen him on occasion at the Den. I think he's still, you know, as you said, you're right, highly, highly respected at the club. Byron Webster, centre-back, 137 games for us, 8 goals, 2015 to 2019. Injury would do for him in the end, as with so many players, but I think he's still very highly thought of. So that was my choice from 2015. I thought we'd try and bring it reasonably recent, as sometimes we do tend to look back a long, long way on this show.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
But you've chosen a real scoreline here, Neil. There's our next fixture, which is going to be Preston. Millwall 5, Preston North End 7 at the Den, 4th of October 1930. Wow, that's some scoreline.
Yeah, this was a proper old school football scoreline, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
You don't seem to get many of these days, more's the pity. But you have a look in history, and if you've got a copy of Richard Lindsay's complete record, you have a look, and these games were littered throughout the early Millwall history. And the match report, which was, I think it was from the Sunday, the People, which is obviously now the Sunday People, says, we are told that the cost of living has recently gone down.
That's a lead into a sports report. I've never think to write, but yeah, okay.
Exactly, yeah. But the followers of football can hardly expect very often to get goals at 12 a shilling, as they did at New Cross yesterday.
It's like Wordsworth has written it out, isn't it?
Oh, fuck it. Oh. Yeah, but you sure this geezer wasn't American? They like to go around the houses, don't they?
Oh, too.
Preston North End claimed 7 of these. And also the full spoils, which they thoroughly earned on the day's play. It sounds like a game of cricket.
I mean, you want to know who scored the goals and what happened and how it came to pass, but yeah.
And then you've got probably the greatest sentence in the history of journalism.
Okay.
Neither defence covered itself with glory.
This is Millwall 5, Preston 7, listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, but after there's been 12 goals, covered themselves in glory. They wouldn't do really, would they? There were bloody 12 goals in this game.
You'd have to have words with them afterwards, I've got to say. It's interesting. I mean, I'm just looking at the millwallhistory.org, which got a full list of results for this 1930-31 season, including Neil's choice here, the 5-7 loss. It's even quite strange to say it, 5-7 loss at home to Preston. But I mean, the results, I mean, we either scored big or we got whopped, didn't we? I mean, you know, there's a 4-0 win, then we're getting beaten 3-1, 2-1, we win 5-1, we get beat 4-1, we lose 5-7, we beat another team here 6-0, we got beat 6-0. It's inconsistent would be the modern term, isn't it?
What's unbelievable about this game was there was only six goal scorers.
Yeah.
In 12 goals. Millwall's goals were two by Jimmy Poxton. One by Jimmy Forsyth and two by Jack Cock, somebody I think we've mentioned on a regular basis. Preston's goals. Alec Reed got two. Tom Scott got a hat trick away from home. And Ted Owens got two. There were 14,674. And you can imagine, we can imagine what social media would be like these days, couldn't you? You lose 7-5 at home. You score 5 at home, you don't expect to get beaten, do you, really?
I'm just picturing the Gary Rowett post-match video where he tries to look for the positives. we go on. I mean, there's another sequence of results here, listeners. I mean, we're looking for the positives. We got a 4-1 loss away at Swansea. We get beat at home by Everton 3-1. We get 5-0 at Bury. We then, after that little sequence, we put 4 past Plymouth. We beat them 4-1, draw 4-4. I mean, Gary would be doing his nut with his defensive, 5-3-2 wing-back system there, wouldn't he?
Oh, mate, can you imagine it? Gary would be resigning, wouldn't he?
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. There we are. Good choice. Great choice. Millwall 5, Preston 7 from 1930. I've gone further back still, Neil. And this is the beauty of subscribing to the British newspaper archive. You can dig out reports from 1903. This is a 4-1 win in the FA Cup, 21st of February 1903. Listeners, in the second round of the FA Cup, Millwall Athletic beating Preston North End 4-1, which was no mean feat. Preston were a major name at this time. I found a short paragraph report from the Yorkshire Post of many newspapers reported places that were not in their catchment area. But Millwall v Preston North End played at Millwall before 7,000 spectators. Winning the toss, Millwall had the advantages of a powerful wind and attacked constantly. So it sounds already like it's going to be a tough gig for Preston. Strong wind on the island at this time. This would have been at North Greenwich, Millwall Park nowadays. Strong wind whipping across the island. McBride saved cleverly many times, but Moran beat him 20 minutes from the start. Orbell having missed a long centre. Gettins had the second goal from a pass by Jones, and Moran a third. The interval score, half-time score, being Mill 3, Preston 0. With the wind behind them, Preston did better, but Sutcliffe kept goal skillfully. Moran and Gettins enabled Jones to score a splendid goal. In the last quarter of an hour, Preston attacked and Pearson scored. They didn't muck about with their pros back. There's none of this Ponzi stuff that you've just been reading out. This was pithy, pithy. Preston attacked and scored. That was it. 4-1 was the result. This was a major, major result on a cup run that would take us to the semi-finals of the FA Cup that season. 1902-1903. We'd go out, I think, to Derby in the semi-finals.
Obviously, Jack Sutcliffe in goal, who was a dual international, played rugby union for England, played football for England. Great, great, great name of the past. And somebody who, from one of our other podcasts, played for Preston was Rabbi Howell, who was a Romany gypsy.
Was he?
England international.
Okay. Interesting stuff. The Dockers would go out in the semis to Derby County. He would actually face Bury, I think, if memory serves, Neil. That was the record score until Manchester City of 6-0. Bury 6, Derby County 0 in the cup final that season. So we would fall short in that particular season in the semi-finals. But quite an achievement for a Southern League side.
But we were one of the leading Southern League sides, and arguably the Southern League back then was as strong, if not stronger, than the Football League was.
The Lions of the South, as the book title so brilliantly puts it. So there we are. That's Preston. We're going to move along now to Swansea City, or Swansea Town. That's cool. Let's get it right, because I think both of our fixtures, really, Neil, we should be referring to Swansea Town rather than Swansea City. You've gone for Millwall 2, Swansea Town 0 in March 1949. And I've chosen a slightly earlier one in 1922. But let's begin with your choice, 2-0. This was played on the 12th of March 1940, on the home win for the Lions.
Yeah, and I've pulled out a match report written by Charles Buchan.
Wow. No, of the annual football annual, yeah.
Yep, very, very famous
player as well, Neil, I think.
Yeah. For the Arsenal, as he liked to be called back then.
Yep.
Sunderland, I believe.
Yep.
And he starts off his match report. There's none of this messing around
that we had
earlier. Millwall supporters said if they played as well against lowly clubs as they do against notchers, they would soon be in the second division.
And what year was this? 1949.
And I was inclined to agree.
Oh dear, nothing changes, does it? How many times have we said that over the course of our lives, listening to it? Oh dear.
But this was I read another match report which said that Swansea were almost assured of promotion.
Yeah.
But they had some injury problems. This, I do believe it was the Western Mail, their local paper, that I read that in. So they're obviously getting in their excuses early. This was actually a good Millwall side. The Millwall side was Sid Hobbins, who was a co-founder of Welling.
I was going to say, is that the same Hobbins family the sons, Graham, and I can't remember the other chap's name, but Hobbins, I think they're still linked to Welling, the Hobbinses, I believe. Yep.
George Fisher,
famous name, yeah.
Yep. Evans, Reeves, McMillan, Bradley, Johnson, Barrett, Jimmy Constantine.
Yep.
Shawson Morgan. And so this was a decent Millwall side, and the goals were splendid moves by Constantine and Shaw, often had the Welsh defenders in trouble. And the cleverness of Hurrell added to their troubles.
I love that word splendid. I'm going to revive that on the show, listeners. You're going to hear me use the word splendid next time.
Yeah, they said won't be calling our podcast splendid, will they?
Splendid. 28,169 at Coldblow Lane, Neil, for this 2-0 home win. Millwall came into the game 10th in the table, and then Swansea but top first. They would actually finish as champions that season, 62 points, and be promoted. Only the champions in those far-off times were promoted. Millwood finish in, 10th position, actually. They'd finish 10th in the table. Bottom being Crystal Palace and Aldershot. So,
and I do believe in that game it was John Short that scored both goals.
Good choice, mate. My choice comes from slightly further back, 1922. I've gone for Millwall 4, Swansea Town. They renamed themselves into City. I think that was in the 60s that they did that. So Millwall 4, Swansea Town 0, played on the 18th of Feb, 1922, not long after we joined the Football League. I think that actually might be our first season as a Football League club. Played in front of 30,700. You forget the big crowds that we used to expect as normal down at Coldblow Lane, you know, 30,000, 28,000, your choice.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been comfortable, would it?
Not been comfortable.
Yeah, but then again, they weren't as big as us now, were they? And
no, that's true. But no, still would have been a tight pack. And your chances of having a wee during a game would have been quite limited. So I don't know. You have to make your own arrangements, I think.
We are a family show. Sorry about that.
Well, but you know, these are the realities of football back then. 4-0 win for Millwall. I've found a report from the Athletic News, which is dated the 20th of February, 1922. And it's using a word that I actually had to look up, listeners. I now know what it means, but I didn't know when I first read it. The headline is keen and clever. Even the most perfervid, that's spelt P-E-R-F-E-R-V-I-D. Even the most perfervid partisan of Millwall could hardly have dreamed that the club would account for Swansea Town in the Cup by 4 clear goals. Yet that is what has happened at New Cross. The Swansea players, I said, have been rather pleased with the draw, so they were confident coming into it. They contended that they've always played well at the Den, and even this season drew a goalless contest in the league. Millwall have undoubtedly done well in the cup contests during the present campaign. The man in Millwall's latest success was undoubtedly Keane. It was Bill Keane. Who's responsible for each of the goals obtained by his club. Keane joined Millwall from Chesham, Buckinghamshire, another non-league side then.
Yeah.
But he's not been too fortunate, for injuries have fallen hard upon him. Whilst at times he has appeared to lose confidence in himself at crucial moments, his latest success should inspire him to further feats and supply the tonic that appears to be needed by the New Cross players. And there's also an interesting, that was the sports roundup section, so a 4-0 win for the Lions. Perfervid, if you're interested, listeners, means to be intensely passionate over something. Intensely passionate. So the most perfervid, passionate partisan of Millwall. That's what that means. I'll have to look that up myself.
And if you actually read the Millwall Who's Who.
Yep.
Billy King's nickname was Mother.
Mother. Saw that. What a nickname. I wonder how we got that. I'd love to know
Mother.
How we got that. Mother used to be in, was it the Avengers? The head of the spy service was called Mother and used to drive around the back of a London bus. He was a big fat guy, sits at the back of the bus and he's called Mother. I am digressing now. One interesting thing, that report that I just read was from the sports roundup in the Athletic News. The Western Mail, interestingly, Neil mentioned that paper already. Western Mail features Swansea Town in London. Fans of Swansea laying a wreath at the Cenotaph. They took the chance to visit the Cenotaph, and there's some images there of their supporters club and chairman laying a wreath at the Cenotaph on Whitehall. And actually an action shot from the Den, Swansea in white, Millwall obviously in blue. This was 1922, so the memory of the First World War being very, very recent indeed. So some nice photos, although they don't, because they've been copied and scanned in, some of the definition is a little bit hard to make out, but you can see enough to know what's going on. So, 4-0 win in the cup for the perfervid partisans of Millwall. I'm going to use that word as well. People think I'm saying perverted or something, won't they? Anyway, there we are. Move along. So, last fixture of the month, Neil. Done Swansea. We have Coventry City away. And you've chosen another win for the Lions. 1957, 3 years before I was to be born, before baby Nick appeared. We went to Coventry City, Highfield Road, I imagine, at that point, and won it 4-1. 23rd of November 1957.
Funnily enough, I was going to pick the fixture that you've gone for, but I thought that was far too easy.
Never, ever knock easy.
You're quite honest. Yeah, great. Not a bad team. Bill Lloyd in goal, who I believe is actually still around, I believe.
Is he?
One of our oldest surviving players.
Okay.
In his late 80s, early 90s now. Alex Jardine, tremendous player.
Yeah.
The 50s and early 60s. John Smith, George Veep, Ray Brand, who I think only passed a couple of years ago. Colin Rawson, Johnny Roach, John Shepherd, tremendous centre forward. And anybody who's actually looking for another book to give anybody for Christmas, if you have a look on Amazon, his daughter has written a biography of
him. Very well rated, Neil, that book. I think it's called In and Out of the Lion's Den. Yeah,
yes, it was absolutely superb book. I believe I read it in about a day. It was one of those books where you started to read it. I think he recovered from TB or something, didn't he? Early in life,
served in the RAF. I'm just reading here in the Who's Who book, served in the RAF book during the Second World War. But yeah, I think he had illness. And I think it's as much a football book as it is a kind of a family stroke history book.
Yeah.
In many ways.
But superb player. believe he did score a hat trick on his debut, 4 goals on his debut or something like that.
Something like that. I'm just furiously trying to read the there it is. He made his league debut against Leighton Orient, listeners, and scored all 4 goals in a 4-1 victory, all scored with his head. He played 172 games for the Lions between 1952 and 58, scoring 82 goals. But that doesn't, the football doesn't tell quite the full story of John Shepherd's life. I think that's probably the best way we can put it. I think the book does capture the many, many stories that lay behind that, those achievements and what he went through to get to that point.
Yeah, Angus Morrison also played. Ron Heckman, another England international. Bromley, I believe.
Okay.
Gordon Pulley. So this wasn't a. I think we got, according to this match report that I've found, who supported Coventry, because it says Millwall terrific? Question mark. Not quite. Coventry defenders gave them a lot of unintended help. Skipped right. Frank Austin too.
So we've been helped to that 4-1 win, but we'll take that any day of the
week. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you don't play that badly and win 4-1 away from home. Christ no. almighty. Austin miskicked to give Johnny Roach a gift goal. 12 minutes later, Austin diverted a harmless shot from Gordon Pulley past his own goalkeeper.
Okay.
Vic Walters making his debut for... Coventry almost put through his own goals. Yeah, there's a recurring theme here, yeah? But we did appear to play quite well in this game.
We never got the credit.
And we didn't get the credit. Angus Morrison headed a third soon after half-time, but then Coventry attacked spiritedly, which meant they just didn't give up. And Ray Shaw, the Straw, got poor service on his debut. Jim Rogers snapped up a goal for Coventry after 48 minutes. And then Pulley unmarked restored Millwall's 3-goal margin from Angus Morrison's cross.
1957-58 season. This would be Division 4 football, Neil, I think, at that point. Let me just check that, listeners. Division 3 South, actually.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry.
It wasn't.
Excuse me. I think if the fourth division will be formed, I think, the following season. This would be the last of Division 3 South. We'd finish in the bottom two, listeners. We'd have to apply for re-election. Shame.
I think what you'll find is we won our last 3 games of the season.
Did we?
The season before. We weren't... We weren't very good.
This particular season, no.
This was actually in, I think it was in Ron Gray's first season in charge after.
No wonder there was a posse trying to get it on. Yeah.
Yeah, after he succeeded Cheerful Charlie. And
there we are.
Having to apply for re-election after winning our last 3 games. I think it was just the bottom two, actually, applied for re-election back then.
Listeners will want to know that Captain Obvious has chosen the far more easy fixture to cover. this is an amazing thing, Neil. I mean, this is from 1927, listeners. We actually achieved the club record home win, with at home or away, twice in the same few months. It's quite an incredible achievement when you look at the fixture. List for 1927. This particular game is a Coventry game. Millwall 9, Coventry 1, played on 19th of November 1927 in the 3rd Division South in front of 13,695 at Colblow Lane. But we'd actually beaten Torquay already with the club record win in September, what's that, 2 months beforehand, putting 9-1 past Torquay United. It's quite an incredible achievement when you think 2 record goal scorers in a few months.
Yeah, there are only 13,695 there to see it as well.
That's right. It's
it just goes to show that what we said earlier on about goals, to score 9 goals twice in a matter of weeks is
that's quite something, isn't it?
It's crazy.
I think also it shows me, or it might show you, yourself, Neil, and the listeners, just 13,000. Given that we're on fire this season, Mill were on fire. I think we'd go on to win the Third Division South Championship and finally get promoted from that tough to leave league. But I think it takes a while for Mill's crowd to accept that success is in the offing. So for a long one, I think even in the promotion season 1987-88, for a long while, we were languishing with crowds about 6,000. We weren't drawing many. It wasn't until the heat really started to turn up at the end of the season, you started to see the bigger numbers coming in. I think, you know, you see it many, many times over the course of history, Millwall history anyway. So 13,000 is not a bad crowd, I suppose, but you're right, it seems quite low.
I wonder if it had anything to do with the fact that we'd moved from north of the river and we hadn't been, so I suppose we've been there approaching 20 years, hadn't we?
20 years by this stage. Don't know. I think we continued to draw a lot of support from the island, didn't we, after that move? And by then, of course, the Surrey Docks would have become the mainstay of the club's support, really, you know, and less so the island, but still a substantial number from the island. I'm loving this match report. I mean, we've already had some really flowery prose from Neil earlier on. This one is from the Coventry Evening Telegraph of 21st of November 1927. The tragedy of Millwall is the headline. You'd think that we'd got beat 9-1 by that. It's not. It's the Coventry's nickname this time was the Bantams. So the tragedy of Millwall, how the Bantams were slaughtered, the inquest. This is written in a pen name by someone called Nemo, as in Captain Nemo. One tackles the task of analysing the Millwall tragedy, Neil, with a feeling akin to those which a coroner must experience when holding an inquest upon the remains of a dear beloved who's been ruthlessly slaughtered. It's a football match. they took a thumping.
Yeah, there were Nemo had issues, didn't he? Yeah, Nemo. You can tell that he was a Coventry fan, can't you?
Yeah, I think Nemo had literary aspirations as well. But beyond sports writing, the tragic fate which awaited the Bantams at Millwall on Saturday caused for not a suggestion of hilarity or even censure. It was terribly sad. This is actually how it's written, listeners. And it goes on to mention the horrible margin of 9-1 and how incorrect he has no inclination to pour wrath upon the city side. Wouldn't you get plenty of wrath down the den if we got thumped 9-1? I can tell you that much, Nemo.
You'd be lucky to get out of there alive.
Get out of there alive. They'd have had a mob formed up on Coldblow Lane, wouldn't they? To have your blood. Coventry were helpless against the magnificently conceived home attack. And this was quite an attack in all seriousness this season, listeners. This was a major season in Mill history, 1927. Championship winning side, I believe, Neil. The Third Division South champions of 1927-28. I'm just looking at the fixture list for that season. We've already mentioned the 2-9-1 wins. We've got 6-1s against Bristol Rovers, 6-0s against Brighton, 5-0s against Charlton.
7-1 against Walsall week after.
6-0 v Gillingham, you name it. They were put to the sword at the Den, listeners. And this was a great, great sign. I mean, look at the goal scoring record. John Landers, Jay Landers, 33 goals. Was it John or was it Jack?
Jack Landers, sorry.
Jack Landles. We've got Bill Phillips, W. Phillips, 27 goals. And Jack Cock, third in the goal scoring table on 26.
Phillips, quite a good little inside forward of his day.
That's incredible. Incredible return. Bill Bryant is fourth in the goal scoring table with 11 goals. You know, that's. In any other season, you'd say, you know, for one player to achieve double figures can be quite a good return, let alone finish fourth in the goal scoring lists as a result.
What would we give now for a player to score 12 goals in a season?
A 33 goal striker, yes, please, is what we'd say, Mr. Rowett, wouldn't we? Let alone three. Incredible. We'd finish champions this particular season and we'd twice achieve our highest record home wins. Magnificent side, all in all, 1927-28, Mill Championship winning side. I've picked out John Landell's 1925 to 33 Mill player, 199 appearances. I'm going from information in the book, listeners. 77 goals from just short of 200 appearances. That's quite an achievement. And he was a converted inside right from being a centre forward previously. So he was an adaptable player now. He changed his game.
Yeah, one that we picked up in non-league football again. Grays Athletic, Grays Thurrock United, the Thames Board Mills, which obviously. And one of those rare players who actually left us to go back north of the river. To the enemy.
To West Ham. Yeah. There we are. It's just fascinating how many players we've come through from those Grays Athletic, Thames Bald Mills, Jurgens FC, Grays Thurrock. I mean, these are, you know, these kinds of clubs are a hotbed of talent, really. And, you know, I know the game has moved on. I'm not sure it's always moved on for the better, but it has moved on, rightly or wrongly. But you do wonder how much talent we miss from those kinds of directions to this day, Neil.
Yeah, but you didn't have youth policies back then, did you? You didn't develop own talent. You relied on the likes of Bob Hunter and his scouting team.
Yeah, and his tactical, his scouting now, I suppose, would be the way you'd put it.
So go out and find you those players.
Half-time score, listeners, 1-1. No hint that the second half will produce 8 goals.
Capitulation, I believe.
Yeah, it looks like it, doesn't it? 9-1 was the finish, the full-time score. 4 goals for Landells, 2 for Cock, 2 for Phillips, and 1 for Collins. Mill 9.
I bet you somebody walked out the ground moaning.
Could have done, but it should have been 10. There we are. Record goal scorer twice in one season. Lovely stuff. That's wonderful, Neil. I really enjoyed, as ever, mulling over these old fixtures, mate. Really appreciate your time and your research and your wonderful book, because that really makes me sound terribly intellectual.
Yeah, just two boomers with nothing better to do on a Wednesday afternoon, strolling down memory lane.
Absolutely. There we are. Those are the fixtures for December. Dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed this show. We will be back towards the end of the month to record the January fixtures. We probably need to find out who we're going to get in the FA Cup to do that full justice, but we'll do that towards the end of the month when we know who we're playing. Don't forget for Christmas your copy of Mill Who's Who via Victor Publishing. And don't forget your Acton Mill calendar so that you know when to get yourself down the den in the new season. So anyway, until our next show, Neil, I think it's time to say goodbye, mate.
Yeah, I think we've got some Christmas specials lined up, haven't we?
We're putting together a few little ideas, yeah.
With people home, and we'll probably be locked down by then if the alpaca has anything to do with
it. We're getting some ideas together, listen. So stay with us. But until the next show, thanks for listening, and arrivederci, Mill. Thanks, Neil, and thank you, dear listeners. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Mill. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Mill. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.